Before we jump in this morning, you know, our mission is to reach as many people as we can for Jesus Christ, and I would just challenge you to look around your office, your neighborhood, and just say, you know, God, open a door for me. And what I know, I mean, I've been doing ministry a long time. Christmas time, people are more open to God. People are searching. People are lonely. And just a simple invite, hey, come join us for church this Sunday, doing a series, Let It Be, or, you know, hey, I'll take you out to breakfast and we'll go to church, or take you out to lunch. You'd be surprised, the people that you may give them the greatest gift of their life, where they get a relationship back with Jesus Christ. So, the long and winding road, you know, some of you are on that road today. Some of you are wandering. You have no real direction in your life. Fact is, some of you are lost right now. You're kind of frustrated, struggling. Some of you are tired of waiting. You're ready to give up on something. You know, some of you are worn out. You keep hitting the wall, so to speak, all the twists, all the turns. You're looking for hope. You want satisfaction in your life. You want purpose. The fact is, some of you are desperately looking for God. You're looking for God to intervene in something. And I will tell you that life has a way of leading us to God. It always does. It's God's intent. It's God's desire that it leads us to his door. You know, Jesus said this in Matthew. He said, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be open to you. You may be waiting right now. Maybe you've been waiting a long, long time for something. I would challenge you to be faithful. You know, keep trusting God. Keep knocking on the door. Keep asking. Keep hoping. God absolutely can be trusted. You can count on God. You know, you may be on that long and winding road, but God has a plan. God has a plan. Now imagine if we were to take a few minutes and we were to talk about our experiences at Christmas as adults, that we'd be all over the map. We'd all have different thoughts about it and different things that we enjoy or that we struggle with, what have you. But I believe if we were to back up when we were children, we would have a lot in common. I mean, those long, agonizing waits for Christmas. You know, my grandkids, they've been geared up for Christmas for a couple months now. You know, reminding me, no, Grandpa, Christmas is coming. You know, Christmas, you know what I'd like for Christmas? And so I remember as a kid waiting for Christmas, and the closer you got to Christmas, the longer the days got, right? I mean, the days before Christmas seemed like the longest and by far, even though they were the shortest, you know. It seemed like Christmas would never get here, and I'll be honest, I couldn't wait. I mean, I couldn't wait. And I know adults go, oh, no, Christmas, it's three weeks away. I can't get everything done. And kids are going, Christmas is around the corner. I can't wait. Oh, yeah, I can't wait. I mean, no matter how long you wait, Christmas always arrives, doesn't it? As a kid, you couldn't wait for it. Some of you didn't wait for it. Now we're going to do a little confession here. All right? How many of you searched the house to find the presents that your mother and father had hidden? All right. How many of you found at some point? All right, now we're going to go for the rebels, all right? How many of you actually got whatever it was out and played with it? I mean, you couldn't wait, could you? Yeah, I remember a few weeks before Christmas. We lived in a trailer at the time, so there weren't a lot of hiding spots. And so I'm looking all over, and finally under the bed, inside a shoebox, I found a brand new G.I. Joe. I got it out, and I played with it. And so I'm playing with it, and I pop its head off. And I'm like, oh no, you know. And then about that time, I hear the car pull in the driveway. And so I'm trying to box it up and everything. And I just shove it in there. I put it back in the shoebox. I put the head in my pocket and I ran to my room. And so for the next couple days, I'm like sweating it out. You know, I'm waiting for a chance to go back to the scene of the crime and try and fix things. And I never, ever got another gift out after that. I found a lot of gifts, but I didn't get them out. You know, I just didn't like waiting. I didn't. You know, Christmas was about waiting. I mean, that first Christmas, it was all about waiting. It was a long and winding road for generations after generations, a group of people, a very small remnant of the Jewish people had been waiting. And waiting, every single day, waiting. Not for Santa Claus, but for the promised Messiah. I mean, each generation, they lived each day expecting that this would be the day that the Messiah would arrive. You know, generation after generation, they're waiting and waiting, and nothing's happening. In fact, many of them died waiting for the Messiah, waiting for the promise to be fulfilled. They're praying and waiting. They're believing and waiting. They're being obedient to God. But they were waiting. In fact, many of the Jews quit waiting. They gave up. Some abandoned the journey of faith. Some relegated the promise to a myth. Simply a very nice story. I mean, who devotes themselves to a 2,000-year-old promise? Who does that? But there were a few people that waited, and they hoped. And every morning they got up and they anticipated that today might be the day that the Messiah would arrive. They lived every day as though God was going to do something. And here's the challenge as we head into the Christmas season this year. I want to look at some people over the next few weeks. And I want to look at people that were waiting. You know, people that were looking for that first Christmas. And the couple I want to look at today, you know, they're on a long and winding road. A journey that required a lot of waiting and a lot of hope. You know, Luke records a story which is very relevant to us today, I believe, because at some point in your life, in fact, some of you have already faced it. Some of you may be going through it right now, but the reality is all of us will hit a point in our lives where we will be waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting on God. We're waiting on God. And as we're waiting, God's silent. It seems as though God's doing nothing. It seems as though God's not paying attention and that God doesn't care. The waiting, when it's like that, is almost unbearable. And rarely is the road straight in life. The fact is, when it's long and it's winding, you find yourself thinking, you know, why am I doing this? I mean, why am I believing? Why go to church? You know, why serve? Why obey? Why stand strong? Why wait day after day for something that I don't think is really going to happen? And I think there are points in all of our lives where we feel like we've been left standing alone. I mean, we're waiting. We feel defeated. We wonder if God cares. And we start questioning, don't we? I mean, is it real? Is God real? Is it a myth? It's a kind of a bout with doubt, you might say. You know, am I following because it's what my parents told me to do? Am I following because I'm afraid if I don't, things just won't work out very well for me? You see, that road, it gets long sometimes. And the more winding it is, and the longer the wait, the more challenging it is, isn't it? I mean, waiting for God is a challenging thing in life. And if you feel like you're waiting on God today, I want to tell you the Christmas stories for you. You know, Luke 1:5, it says, in the time of Herod, king of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah who belonged to the priestly division of Abijah. His wife Elizabeth was also a descendant of Aaron. This verse tells us that Zechariah and Elizabeth, that both of their fathers were priests. They're in the priestly line in Israel. It means they were Levites. Their father was a priest. Their grandfathers had been priests. Their great-great-grandfathers had been priests. Their great-great-great-great-great-grandfathers had been priests. Zechariah, he's a priest. It says that both of them were righteous in the sight of God, observing all the commandments and decrees blamelessly. When God looked down at Zechariah and Elizabeth, God looked at their lives. They were doing the right thing. In other words, they were living God-honoring lives. They observed all God's commandments. And I will tell you, in the Old Testament, there are a lot of commandments. A lot of commandments. I think you could have hired a private investigator to follow them around. And what you would have found was that they had no fault. Scripture says that. They were right in the sight of God. They were righteous. This couple is following God, and they're waiting on the Messiah. And this is a long, long road we're talking about. For 2,000 years, people have been waiting. Waiting for the promised one, the Messiah. Generation after generation, waiting, believing, hoping. And for 700 years, I want you to get your mind around this. For 700 years, God's been silent. Has done nothing for the nation of Israel. And what happened was a lot of people gave up hope. They stopped waiting. But this couple, they get up every morning and they live their lives as though Christmas is coming. The Messiah is coming. They live their lives in such a way that they believe that God is actually going to fulfill the promise. There's no visible movement. There's nothing that they can look at. But they're faithful, and I believe people noticed it in their lives. Scripture says, but they were childless because Elizabeth was not able to conceive, and they were both very old. I want you to imagine their friends, people they worked with maybe, people around town. They're like, let me get this straight. You get up every day. You trust that God's gonna do something. You're waiting on the Messiah. You serve in the temple. You're being obedient. You trust God. This God that you're so faithful to hasn't given you an heir yet. You've been faithful, but you're waiting on a child. And now, I mean, let's be honest, you're pretty old. How's that working for you? In that day, and in that society especially, it was really tough on women. Women that didn't have children. Women had very little status in that day. And having a child, it was the one thing that they got noted for. They got recognized for that. Women didn't have a political standing. Generally, they didn't work outside the home. In fact, women's educational opportunities, they were very, very limited in that day. And so children to that society, they were a blessing from God. And so if someone didn't have a child, people looked at it and they go, oh, God must be punishing them for something. Now, I want to be very clear, that was that society. It wasn't right. They didn't have the medical knowledge we have today, but the culture was cruel. In that day, Elizabeth is a righteous woman. She was God honoring with everything that she did. She's waiting. And so through the young years, she's waiting for a child. Through the middle years, she's waiting. And in the advanced years, she's elderly now. It's too late. It's not going to happen. Scripture tells us that they prayed earnest prayers, desperate prayers. I believe they probably cried pools of tears over and over. There's no answer from God. They lived with the shame and the pain into their old age. It was a long, winding road for them. But they stayed the path, completely obedient and faithful to God. You know, their faithfulness was based on the promise that God made to Abraham, a 2,000-year-old promise that this was before Elizabeth, before Zechariah were even born. God had promised Abraham in person, went to Abraham, and he says, I'll make you a great nation. God did that. And I will bless you. And God did that. And I will make your name great. And God did that. But then things start falling apart. You will be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you. And whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the people of the earth will be blessed through you. That last line, all people on earth will be blessed through you, it's pointing to Jesus Christ, the coming Messiah. You know, historically we know that Abraham was an old man when the promise became real, when he was given a child, a son. It made it possible for him to have heirs and to become this great nation. And they did become a great nation. You know, they became the children of Israel. They moved to Egypt. They were forced into slavery. They were slaves for over 400 years. And then God miraculously moved and delivered them from slavery. And then he led them to the promised land, the land that he had promised to Abraham. You know, Israel became a kingdom, a great kingdom. And God blessed them. They got kind of hit the golden age for Israel when King David, King Solomon were in charge. The Jewish people then began thinking, you know what? The kingdom of Israel, this is what it's about. The kingdom's power is how God's going to bless all the people of the world. You know, and then it starts falling apart on them. Their war breaks out. It splits the nation. And for hundreds of years, they had good kings, bad kings, good kings, bad kings, good kings, bad kings. You know, from Solomon to the time of Zechariah and Elizabeth, 25 times they change hands. The Syrians conquer them. The Babylonians take them into captivity. The Greeks, the Persians, the Romans. Israel is no longer relevant. Israel no longer has power. There's no wealth. There's no voice. They don't even have a voice over their own people, over their own future. They're struggling. So the idea that somehow God's going to bless the entire world through Israel seemed kind of ridiculous at that point. You know, 65 BC, Pompey, the great Roman general, he conquers Jerusalem. He marches right in. He marches right into the temple. He pushes the guards aside and he walks into the Holy of Holies. A place that the Jewish people believed only the high priest could go. I mean, they believed that if you arrived and stepped into the Holy of Holies unannounced and uninvited, that God would strike you dead. And so I imagine that when Pompey walked in and nothing happened, I imagine the priests were just shocked. They're blown away. Nothing. In fact, I would imagine that the word on the street, the implications were very clear that Jupiter, the god of the Romans, was stronger than Yahweh, the god of Israel. When this happened, Zechariah's father, Elizabeth's father, they would have both been priests at that time. And so as children, they would remember There is no doubt about this. They remember their fathers coming home with their robes torn, because that's what a priest would do when they were mourning. Pompey had desecrated the temple. He'd trampled on tradition. He had desecrated everything that was holy. And there is no doubt that Zechariah and Elizabeth absolutely would have remembered that God did nothing that day. But Zechariah still becomes a priest. This couple, they serve God faithfully their whole lives. I mean, how could this tiny remnant, this broken down people who had been conquered, how are they going to impact the world? You know, this nation, it's hanging on by a thread. And many of the Jewish people had given up on God. They no longer went to temple. They no longer worshiped. They walked away from their faith. In fact, many of them integrated into the Greek and Roman life. Most gave up hope. Most believed that that promise from God is a myth. But not everybody. And absolutely not Zechariah. And not Elizabeth. And I'm sure, again, their friends were like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Trust in God. God's not going to do anything. It's over. It's a myth. It's not going to happen. The promise is dead. You know, Israel's too small. It's broken. It's barely able to do anything. But they were wrong. See, that's why Luke, if you ever wonder why Luke started with this story, he begins because he wants to point to the fact that God has always been working. God's always been working. It was a winding road, but God's working to fulfill the promise that he made to Abraham. You know, the Apostle Paul, he starts putting the puzzle pieces together. He says, Scripture foresaw that God would justify the Gentiles by faith and announce the gospel in advance to Abraham. All nations will be blessed through you. See, God would fulfill the promise through Jesus Christ. You know, it's through that lineage, and you can track it all the way back to Abraham. This story's relevant, and it's important. And I believe it speaks to us when we're waiting on God, when you're on that long, winding road. When you ever wonder, sometimes you get on that road, things aren't working out like you wanted. You're like, is God active? Is God listening? Does God care? Can God be trusted? Friends, I will tell you, Christmas screams absolutely yes. You know, the Luke's account, Zechariah, he's serving in the temple. And the lot fell to him. He was to go burn incense outside the Holy of Holies. And this was something that didn't happen often. In fact, it might be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for a priest. Zechariah carries the incense in. He's outside. He's in the holy place, right outside the Holy of Holies. He's alone. People are praying outside for him. Zechariah is doing what he's supposed to do. This is a special day. And an angel appears to him. And it scares him. And the angel starts the conversation the same way all angels start their conversation this way. Do not be afraid. You know, all of a sudden there's an angel. Ah, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid, Zechariah. Your prayers have been heard. Your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son. And you are to call him John. It's John the Baptist here. John the Baptist would be the one that would announce the coming of Jesus. He will be a joy and a delight to you. And many will rejoice because of his birth, for he will be great in the sight of God, or the Lord. He goes on and he says, he will bring back many of the people of Israel to the Lord their God. You go, well, why would John the Baptist have to bring people back? Well, friends, because people had turned away from God. See, the promise had been reduced to a myth. something that people just like to talk about. It made for a really good story to share with your children. But many felt like God had abandoned Israel. And so you know what people did? They abandoned God. After Zechariah, he hears this message from the angel. He says, Zechariah asks the angel, how can I be sure of this? I'm an old man. Now, he gets real diplomatic. I love it. And my wife is well along in years. Yeah, he's a smart guy. He didn't call her old. I'm glad you heard our prayers. Always knew you'd hear our prayers, but take a look. You're a little bit late. I mean, we prayed when we were in our 20s and in our 30s. We prayed a lot in our 40s. We almost quit praying in our 50s, but now we're too old. We're too old. And the angel says to him, I am Gabriel. See, he's going to play the top angel card here. I stand in the presence of God, and I have been sent to speak to you and tell you this good news, and now you will be silent and not able to speak until the day this happens, because you did not believe my words, which will come true at their appointed time. Imagine Zechariah's like, wait a minute. You mean God had an appointed time? God had this on his calendar? God's been waiting on purpose? God's been watching all these people abandon the faith? You know, God allowed Israel to be conquered and become really weak? I mean, this long and winding road, it was part of God's plan. God not only heard our prayers, but he was working. He's been working for generations and generations. You mean God was silent for 700 years? God hadn't lost interest in us? God's been active in our lives? He's been working for this appointed time. I think people outside, because it's taken him a long time to burn the incense. He should have been back a long time ago. So I think they're trying to figure out, well, why is he gone? It says, when he came out, he could not speak to them. They realized he had seen a vision in the temple, for he kept making signs to them, but remained unable to speak. See, I imagine it was challenging. He came out, he can't talk. So it's like charades all of a sudden. You know, he's like, sparrow. Yeah. Raven. Batman. Angel. Angel. Marriage. Wife. Baby? Ah, baby. He explains it to them. And then he heads home. It says, after this, his wife Elizabeth became pregnant and for 5 months remained in seclusion. The Lord has done this for me, she said. In these days, he has shown his favor and has taken away my disgrace among the people. Friends, this was the opening act. This was the event before the big event. This was evidence that God was gearing up to do what he had planned to do all along. All those people who had been faithful through the years, generation after generation, all those who had been faithful and died without ever seeing the promise fulfilled, all those people who had been faithful and had passed on to their children the hope that the Messiah would come one day. It did. See, that road you're on, it might be long and it might be winding. God might be silent right now, but I will guarantee you God is working. God can be trusted. God always keeps his promise. Always, always, always keeps his promise. You know, Luke, the first chapter, verse 26 and 27 says, in the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David. The virgin's name was Mary. It was the fulfillment of the promise, a 2,000-year-old promise. The final event, the promised Messiah, Jesus, would be born, which is our beginning. That's where we start. I mean, the question is, will we be faithful in our lives? Or will we walk away when things don't go the way we planned? You know, will we believe or stop believing? Will we serve or will we go another way? You know, will we give or will we spend as though this life is all that really matters? You know, will we do the godly thing in our lives? Or will we go the way that culture would have us go? You know, will we maintain our integrity in life, even when nobody notices, even when people laugh, even when it costs us? There is a point in your life that you will hit at some point where you just have to question this stuff. And I will tell you, if that's where you're at today, where you're struggling and you're questioning, that you're not alone. You're not alone. See, the fact is, the good news is that you're not alone. There's nothing wrong with you. The good news is that it's a common experience. And the good news is that you got to make a choice at that point. Just like Elizabeth, just like Zechariah, they decided that they'd be faithful. They decided that they would live God-honoring lives in spite of what they could see, in spite of what people were saying, in spite of what was going on in culture, in spite of the unanswered prayers. And friends, I would challenge you to make the same choice. You know, God is faithful. God is faithful, and God used a nation that was beaten down and broken and weak, and God blessed the entire world through that nation of Israel with the birth of Jesus Christ, the Messiah, just like he planned. See, the long and winding road, God was working. God already knew where it was going. And friends, you may be on a road today, and you got a lot of questions, and you're struggling to make sense of it, and you have a decision to make. Will you remain faithful? Will you trust God? See, Christmas reminds us that our faith in God is not misplaced. And even though God is silent, or seems like he's silent, does not mean he is inactive. You know, even when you are convinced that God doesn't care, I will tell you he's listening. Even when you don't see anything happening, the fact is God is working. And it may be a long road, and it may be winding, and it may be difficult, but I will tell you, God has a plan for your life. God has a plan. Nothing is impossible for God. Your faith and your hope is not in vain. God is always, always faithful, and God proved that first Christmas, and that's why we celebrate. There's a God that can be trusted. Whatever that thing is that you're waiting on, God, there's hope. God can be trusted with that. Let's stand for a word of prayer. God, we stand before you. And God, I know there are some here today, they're waiting. And they've been waiting a long time. And I know there are some ready to give up hope, ready to give up on something. They've ran out of even the energy to hope against hope. God, I pray your Holy Spirit would just whisper. Let them know that you're working, that you got a plan. That it may not be the way they see it, but it's a better plan. God, I pray that God, you just give us a heart that'll trust. A heart that'll be obedient. No matter what. God, I pray this Christmas that we'd just draw near to you just as you drew near to us. And God, when you do move, and you do make things right, and we can see that plan, God, I pray that we would yell it from the mountaintops, that we'd share it with those around us, that you can be trusted. God, we give you the glory. We give you the praise this day and every day. And God's people said, you may be seated. I just pray you'd kind of take this in meditation as we prepare for communion. And we thought we would start a little different this year, and we'd start Christmas with communion and gather around God's throne.